Headlines.
Live from Washington, D.C., the capital of the divided states of America, it's time for the show that brings you both sides of the issues that matter. In the left corner, I'm political analyst and progressive Democrat Garland Nixon.
And in the right corner, I am Republican investigative reporter Lee Stranahan.
Welcome to the most disruptive show in America, Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. In round one, Donald Trump lays out his Afghanistan strategy with no specifics other than being tough and lots of winning until we've won. Lockheed Martin's stocks go up as the American people's spirits go down. In round two, President Trump travels to Arizona today for an evening rally in Phoenix. Will he pardon controversial Sheriff Joe Arpaio and attack Jeff Flake and John McCain, or simply share a new recipe for Southwestern Chipotle chili with the crowd? Then in round three, Louise Linton, wife of Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, goes full Marie Antoinette on an Oregon mother of three on Instagram over a post in which Ms. Linton brags about her lifestyle of the rich and famous. Is it time for the Wall Street oligarchs to put the littles in their place once and for all? That and more coming up on the most disruptive show in America, Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. Well, we had a lot of fun last night. We actually did a show, a special edition of Fault Lines from 8 to 10, where we covered the speech, and we had John Kiriakou here, who is a CIA counterterrorism specialist, and a lot of information. It was really a great show. Looking forward to doing some stuff like that again. So let me start off by saying this. A couple of things. Number one, you want to check us out certainly on 105.5 FM in Washington, D.C., but you can watch radio. Just go to the Sputnik News Agency's Facebook page, and you can watch Facebook Live. Share it with your friends. Additionally, go to Periscope. Follow Lee at Stranahan. And each of our episodes is periscoped, and they actually periscope them separately so you can save them, whatever, watch them one at a time. Lee, very interesting last night. Let me tell you something that I thought was interesting.
We should just mention, in case people missed it, we had a special edition last night of Fault Lines.
And it's on your Periscope, isn't it?
A primetime edition. Well, I'll tell you the other place people can watch it. Go to populist.tv, and we have all four segments up, and you can check it out there. So it's on, we record the Periscopes, and it's a good way to watch it. You can also watch it, of course, on Sputnik and everything else on the Sputnik page and Facebook.
You know something I thought was interesting? Something that Lee did last night. So we listened to the speech, and afterwards Lee read a tweet from someone, and he said, "Who do you think this is?" And I was like, Lee Camp and John Kiriakou. We were guessing these like left, far wing.
Elizabeth Warren, John.
Yeah, John.
By the way, how great was John last night?
He was excellent.
A great, great guy.
This guy really knows his stuff.
He does. Yeah.
So we're guessing Elizabeth Warren. We're guessing, you know, Bernie Sanders, whoever. It was Ann Coulter.
That's right.
And it was basically, throwing her hands up like so many other people saying, yeah, looks like no matter who you vote for, you get the same thing. So let me touch on a couple of things with the Afghan speech, and then we'll see what you have to say. So one of the reactions was the European Union ambassador to Kabul, who's Franz Michael Melvin, who said it is an important signal that Trump's vagueness was shrewd. He said, it's an important signal to the Taliban that they can no longer wait us out. Well, you know.
Well, I think his shrewdness was vague.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. Well, you know, can the Taliban wait us out? Well, I did a little research, and I found that early humans were living in what is now Afghanistan for at least 52,000 years. You know what, Lee? I'm really thinking they can wait us out. I don't think we got 52,000 years, you know. So, but the bottom line is, the other thing was this I found. So I'm looking around online, doing a research, and I found that this should have been a clue before the speech. The American military has a $6.5 billion plan to make the Afghan Air Force self-sufficient and end its over-reliance on American air power by 2023.
I'm sure that'll happen. You think it might go over budget and over schedule a little bit? You think it's possible?
It's going to be $650 billion, it's no longer 2023 because we now know that, and that's the bottom line. So here's the end result,
I also love the idea of giving jets to people who periodically kill the American advisors. When you've got an army where they periodically just go on a rampage and take out the Americans who are supporting them, I like the, let's give them jet.
Yeah, let's put them
That's a great idea.
Let's put them in a FA-18 Hornet ground attack aircraft. What could possibly go wrong there?
Yeah. I like that. That's like, Johnny's having so many problems at school and work. Let's get him a gun.
Exactly.
It's like, what? What are you doing? So let's talk about, we mentioned John Kiriakou was on last night. He's a former CIA officer who was in Pakistan in 2002, has been to Afghanistan. Let's play a quick clip. This is from last night's show. This is from last night where we did a special edition of Fault Lines before and after the speech, breaking it down. Let's hear what John had to say.
If there are any certainties that come out of this speech, it's that in India, they'll be dancing in the streets tomorrow morning, and in Pakistan, they'll be rioting in the streets tomorrow morning. If there's one thing that the Pakistanis absolutely hate, it's to be criticized for being weak on terrorism. They will argue, and I'm not saying I disagree with the president. I think sometimes you need to give Pakistan
a
smack.
But at least he did it in the same sentence where he said, I love India.
Yeah. Right, no, which is just going to enrage the Pakistanis. Yeah, what do you hope to accomplish by pissing off the Pakistanis? The Pakistanis know that we don't trust them. They know that we don't believe them when they say that they're with us in this fight against terrorism. But how does it promote American counterterrorism policy to go on national television and insult them? This is what you tell them privately, not in a nationally televised speech.
Let me read you a response today from Moshaf Saidi, a foreign policy analyst in Islamabad, Pakistan. He said, in response to last night's speech, by inviting India to be more active in Afghanistan, Trump has confirmed the worst fears of Pakistan's generals, that America is in cahoots with India against Pakistan. I think John Kiriakou kind of hit the nail on the head last night, wouldn't you say, Lee?
He absolutely did. And again, he knows this because he's been there. And like I said, I'm by the way, we don't get paid on commission here. So if I tell you to listen to the show from last night, it's because I'm actually very proud of the work we did on the show. I thought it's entertaining. They cut out, I don't know why they cut this out. They cut out the part where I mentioned that Indians will be dancing in the street, because if you've seen any Bollywood movies, they apparently like to do that. I don't know why they cut that out in the clip there, probably because it's irrelevant. But look, we were talking about this earlier. The show's entertaining. We try to keep the show funny and interesting to listen to. Because if Garland and I did one of these, hello, welcome to Fault Lines. This is Lee Stranahan. On today's episode, I would kill myself, yeah, and so would you, right? So we try to keep the show interesting. But the cool thing was, aside from the jokes, it was a deep show. We really dug deep into some issues. If you want to understand how we got to the point we've gotten to in Afghanistan, if you want to understand the background of terrorism, if you want to hear stuff you're not going to hear anywhere else, please, please, please listen to that show from last night. Take 20 minutes, listen to part, then listen to another part, because I think it bears up under that kind of, you can binge view it, sure, go nuts if you want to, but I think it bears that up. John nailed this because he's been there,
right,
and because we're not selling anything. Does that make sense?
Exactly.
We're not worried about keeping our position on the McDonnell Douglas think tank or whatever.
Well, the other thing is, this isn't Rachel Maddow where she's got her, you know, position. This isn't Rush Limbaugh where he's got his position. You got a couple people with some ideological differences here in Lee and I, and we're going to see it in different things, but we kind of want to learn what's going on. So you're not turning on something that's just going to support the beliefs you already have. There's going to be questions arise. But this guy, John, really knows his stuff.
Yeah.
And I put it like this. I think other people enjoy it because I learned so much.
Well, and I think also we demonstrated that we actually know what we're talking about there too. In other words, I thought it was very good. Listen to it. Now, here's the thing. This Pakistan thing, I'm going to repeat stuff we said last night. This Pakistan thing was a dangerous turn in the speech last night. Now, there was a giveaway in the title of the address. It was not, by the way, everyone thought he was going to come out and say we're increasing 4,000 troops
right
in Afghanistan. He said, well, we're not going to give you any details. We're just going to, it's endless war. And by the way, don't question us. This is what we're going to do. Now, very, very interesting.
I don't know about you. I think that was worse than giving a number. I understand that, but the way people are going to take that, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Now there's an article in the New York Times today. Now, by the way, if you are a Republican like me and you're critical of the New York Times, that's fine. But let me tell you, I think this came from Steve Bannon. I just do. So if you don't trust the New York Times as a source, that's fine. But I'm pretty sure this detail came from Bannon. And I don't know that because I have not talked to Steve and no one told me that. But here's what I know. The title of the article is Angry Trump Grilled His Generals About Troop Increase, Then Gave In. And it discusses a meeting that happened on July 19th in the Situation Room. And by the way, Maggie Halberman is the reporter on it. Now, I So I'm going to say, I think we know where this came from. I'm just telling you, because what the article goes into detail about is that Trump did not want to increase troop levels, that he'd met with enlisted soldiers, and that basically the generals battered him into submission. Now, while I'm talking about that, so that's an interesting detail, and it would make sense. You see why I'm saying I think this may have come from Bannon?
Yes.
Because if I were Steve Bannon, I would try to get that detail out, and I would use the New York Times. I wouldn't use Breitbart.
Right.
Because Breitbart's going to be ignored on that. That's the reality. But if it comes from the New York Times, it's front page, and it is. You see what I'm saying? So this is Bannon, I think, being media savvy, if indeed it came from Bannon, which I don't know, but I think it did. Now, let me say one thing about that. As a Trump supporter, I've seen him do a lot of rallies. You're not a supporter, but you've seen him do rallies too. Here's the reality. I didn't say it last night, but we were listening through headphones. These headphones, they call them cans in the industry. So we're listening through the cans last night. Tell me if I'm wrong, Garland. We even talked about this. Trump sounded like an old man saying things he didn't really believe. You've seen him at rallies where his energy is up.
Yeah, he just sounded like he was reading from a script,
yes.
Number one.
And he really did. When I heard him through the headphones.
Right. And it was really that old school kind of politician, kind of Capitol Hill speak where you say something, but where you say words, but you don't really say anything. And
right.
You could tell, you know, that this was written by some old school, you know, bureaucrat there. And one of the things that I thought was interesting about that, when he said, we're going to have a clear definition of winning, right? But it was a clear definition of winning in the way that a boxer would do it. If you would say to a boxer, I mean, I'm not saying a boxer, but if you would say to a boxer, what's your definition of winning? Okay, most people would think the other guy's laying on the mat and, you know, he's counted out and they're holding up your hand declaring you the winner. But he defined it in a way like, what's your idea of winning? Well, you know, if you're landing a few punches, hitting the guy, drinking some water in the corner between. The definition of winning was just kind of like a running, you know, discussion of things that happened. What's winning? Well, we're going to kill some terrorists and we're going to patrol any area, probably drink some water. Some guys are maybe going to fly helicopters, things like that. The definition of winning was put out there as basically there's a clear definition of winning. What is it? Being there for a long, long time and then like we'll be winning the whole time.
That New York Times article I just mentioned, here's a quote from it from Stephen K. Bannon. Here's the quote. It says, this is what Bannon said in the room. By the way, it's attributed to, I'll read the whole paragraph. I'll just read the whole paragraph, then I'll explain. For 16 years, from neocons to progressive to Obama's people, they all thought they made great decisions, Mr. Bannon said, according to a person in the room.
Yeah, why are we any smarter?
Yeah, right. Why are we any smarter than they are? That's what Bannon said. Right. Now, by the way, it's true. You know, my son Jack's in the room, said Lee Stranahan, according to a person in the room.
Right.
Right. Who's Lee Stranahan? So that I'm a reporter. I understand the tricks. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know the game. What you do is, because I do this, by the way, I'm going to be fully honest. When you give reporters information, you do it either on the record, off the record, or on background. On the record means you can, what I'm saying, you can say and attribute it to me. On background means don't attribute it to me. And off the record means I'm going to tell you something, but you can't. It's so you know it, but you can't do anything with it. So when you do stuff on background, the reporters ask you, how do you want to be attributed in this? And they'll sometimes say, well, do you want to be attributed as a former Breitbart employee? And I'm like, no. I'm like, because they'll figure out it's me.
Exactly.
So attribute it to a source with knowledge or whatever. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
This is how reporting works. I'm just telling you, this
right.
is how it works. And there's a variety of reasons. The reasons I do that sometimes is I've gotten information from people inside Breitbart and I don't want to burn them.
Right.
You see, so if people knew it came from me, they'd go, well, gee, who does Lee talk to? And so when I read this, that's why I'm putting it out there. Now, the other thing that I want to make sure that we mention about this is what I mentioned last night also, which is that GOTA thing. The White House released a press release last night, and it didn't get much press, but I'm on the mailing list, so I got one. And it was talking about the GOTA attack, where supposedly Bashar al-Assad gassed his own people. Now, I've investigated that. I don't want to get into the weeds. I don't think it's true, but here's the point. What we saw last night, I think, Garland, was the generals who control Trump opening up two new fronts.
Right.
They were doubling down on Syria, where McMaster's already called for regime change. And in other words, whatever Trump promised doesn't make any difference. These guys, McMaster's not on board with that. And the other front is this Pakistan thing. Now, as you point out, the Pakistan thing is already not going well. It's already predictably bad.
And additionally, if we look at the reactions, right, we've got General John Nicholson. He gives you the rah-rah. This new strategy means the Taliban cannot win militarily. A peaceful, stable Afghanistan is victory for the Afghan people and the goal of the coalition, right? So the Taliban spokesman, which is, I think, an interesting job to have, to be the spokesman for the Taliban, says nothing new, but many Afghans said, basically what he said, nothing new. That's what the Taliban said. Afghans on the government side had a similar take. That's the same strategy going on the last two decades, which sounds exactly
that's
what
exactly
Steve
right.
Bannon said to the New York Times.
That's right.
That's the same strategy going on the last two decades, said Jamaluddin Badr, a member of the Afghan High Peace Council. He said, we're going to win, but he didn't make it clear how we're going to win. And I think what we saw from that, if you sum everything up, is when we looked at people on the right, there was a lot of, we heard this song before and we're tired of it. People on the left said that. And the people in Afghanistan, everybody basically said, this is nothing more than a continuation of the same policy since 2001, whenever
there's
it was.
There's a cliche
that, it
that says the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, right? There's also another cliche that says the definition of insanity is eating your socks and calling your giraffe Melvin. But that's quoted a lot less. But the first one is apropos here, because there was literally nothing new. It was literally just vague nothingness.
And keep in mind,
the generals want that. And you mentioned Lockheed Martin stock is up today.
And depending on who you talk to, the Taliban now controls somewhere between a minimum of 35%. And a maximum of 60% of the country. And this is after 16, we've actually lost territory.
Yes.
Since we've been there. So the bottom line is, it looks like if we're there, we're actually going to go in the operation. Let's not forget, for all this we're saying, if I'm not mistaken, I think the number was like 100,000 troops that Barack Obama did during the surge. And that didn't do any good.
No, and the 4,000 that they want to add, which is the number, by the way,
right.
Trump didn't say it. That's adding 4,000 to 8,400 that's there. That's not going to make a dent either, and John said that last night.
And we'll be back for round two. We've got plenty to talk about in round two. We've got President Trump's Arizona speech tonight. We'll be back in a minute. You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines. Fault Lines.
We are back with round two. You're listening to Fault Lines, the most disruptive radio show in America. And we're going to point out that you can catch the show. You can subscribe on iTunes. If you do that, please rate and review the show. You can also catch us on Spreaker, always on the Sputnik website and on the Sputnik app, which is a great way to watch. Listen, really. You can watch the app, but it just stares back at you. But if you want to listen to the show, it's a great way. There's a live button up top. And by the way, I don't know if you know this, but there's these newfangled cars, Garland, that have the Bluetooth on them.
Yes.
And you can hook up your phone to the Bluetooth, and then on the app, you could play it. It would almost be like driving around listening to the show. Think about that. It's almost
105.5 kind FM in Washington.
Sort of like people do on 105.5. FM. Coming up, we're going to be playing some banjo for you here on 105.5. So let's talk about what's going on. So there's this Phoenix rally tonight. And before we get into this, what the rumors are is that Donald Trump is going to announce a pardon for Joe Arpaio. Sheriff Joe Arpaio is the controversial sheriff in Maricopa County, Arizona, for many, many years, the longest serving sheriff in Maricopa County, who lost the election after George Soros pumped millions of dollars into that race. And he was on contempt of court charges over not following an order that involved his actions, which I think were perfectly, completely, not just legal. I think it was a sham that he was given contempt of court. I think the whole thing was a sham. But
apparently the judge felt differently.
He did feel differently. And I got to say, that's a judge's prerogative, but as we've seen, there's a lot of judicial activism going on. But I want to leave that aside for a second. I don't want to get into the substantive issues yet. We'll talk about that. But I'm going to tell you something I know personally. I interviewed Sheriff Joe Arpaio last year. Jack, my son Jack was there. My son Shane was there. By the way, Joe was very gracious to all of us, right? Great guy. Took photos with him and everything else. Very, very nice personally. Now, let me tell you one thing that no one's reporting, but I can tell you because I reported this already. Sheriff Joe's Arpaio's wife, Ava, has cancer. She's ill. So now Sheriff Joe's been sentenced to
13 months, I think.
13 right? months. Yeah. And his wife is not well. I'm just going to put it that way because Joe told me this on the record. I'm not repeating anything out of school. She's a huge Donald Trump fan. And he pointed out to me, and you know this, Garland, you've been in politics for a while, right? You know, a lot of times when people get an endorsement from somebody, they never hear from them again. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of politicians, this is not Democrats, Republicans, it's everybody. So Joe told me that Trump, he'd already gotten the endorsement from Joe, and that Trump always made sure to ask about his wife, and that one, he offered to fly his wife to the hospital in Trump's jet, and that Trump knew that his wife was a big fan of Trump's, and Trump got on the phone and spent 5 minutes talking to her. He's busy. So all I'm saying, here's what I'm saying. I'm not even trying to, if you don't like Trump, fine, I don't care. Whatever. I'm not telling you this so you'll like Trump. I'm telling you this so I want you to understand that Donald Trump is aware that this man's wife is very ill.
That there's some kind of a personal relationship going on here.
Yes.
And that enhances the probability
yes.
that Trump will give him will pardon him. And I think it is quite possible that he'll do it. And one of the reasons I think is this. I think that when it comes to policy, particularly after last night, that Trump has, you know, let's face it, there are a lot of people who were Trump supporters who are very upset because Trump has backtracked on a number of policies. And last night was
like last night. Know, he backtracked on a number last night.
Yeah, that was you know, a very big one. That was a big one for a lot of people. Right. So I think right now, I think Donald Trump is looking to throw some red meat to the base. And here's the question that's true.
But the only reason I brought that up is because I just want to say,
right,
knowing that Sheriff Joe Arpaio might, if he goes to jail, prison, whatever,
his wife could die. Let's be honest, she could die while he's in prison.
Exactly.
So
exactly
I think when
right.
you take the two factors together, number one, the personal relationship that Trump has with the family, and number two, the fact that he needs to, I'm sure the White House is hearing it. I'm sure the Trump people are hearing it from some of their base today on Twitter and, you know, on everywhere that he's seen it on Twitter. There are a lot of people that are mad that Trump would be inclined to throw some red meat towards the base. Now, the question is this, and this is what I'm thinking, because this is what happens with politicians. I've seen it happen on my side of the aisle as well. You know, we see it happen. A politician comes out and they say, hey, you know, I'm going to give you all these things, you know, chicken in every pot, blah, 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 right? And then the politician starts backtracking. And I think this is where a lot of Bernie people kind of went awry of the Democratic Party and, you know, the whole Dem exit thing. You go in and then people start, they make you promises and then they backtrack and they backtrack and they backtrack and they backtrack, right? And every now and then they throw you something symbolic, because the fact of the matter, if you're a Trump supporter and the president pardons Joe Arpaio, it's symbolic, but it doesn't affect you. You know what I mean? It's something that a Trump supporter would say, that's great, but it's not, he's not giving them something. It's more symbolic than anything else. So as the Bernie people, that's kind of put us in this political limbo for a lot of the Bernie supporters who felt, really, that's what we kept getting from the establishment wing of our party, is a whole lot of promises. And then every now and then they throw you a symbolic red meat. And I think that there are a lot of people in this country that are looking at politicians, and that's what they've been accustomed to for a long time. And a lot of people are, that's why our political, you know, the environment here is very unstable politically. And to me, if Trump does this, it's still symbolic. And the question is going to be, are the Trump supporters going to say, yeah, you know, you backed off on everything. You fired people they didn't want fired. Now you've done the huge one, which is just say you're there for the endless war again. Lee, do you think Trump supporters will look at kind of a symbolic thing like this and say, well, okay, well, that's good enough. Well, we forgive you for everything else.
Let's think longer term. And everything I just said about the personal thing still applies. And I'm not. And by the way, I think that Trump would do all that. I think Trump would pardon him without any political calculations. That being said, let me make a political calculation here. Steve Bannon has said that with Bannon out, the wall is probably dead. He doesn't think it's going to get funded. Let's talk about why that is. Paul Ryan and a number of Republicans are not going to end up funding the wall. You saw this very early on where they pushed back against funding it.
Yeah.
And Trump caved at that time. And at the time, I justified it by saying, it's the beginning of the administration. There's a long time. Pick your battles. Let's not have that battle now. Okay, now it's in trouble. So now, Arpaio was one of the earliest supporters of Donald Trump. I was at the first big Trump rally in Phoenix that Arpaio was at, okay? Why did Arpaio support Trump? Because he's tough on immigration, and the wall's part of that. Now, do the calculation here, Carla. Think about this. The wall doesn't get funded. And now, picture this from a Trump supporter standpoint. Does this make sense? Now picture it's 6 months down the road. It's clear the wall's not going to happen. Sheriff Joe Arpaio comes out and says, I am disappointed in the person I supported because I supported him for the purposes of the wall, and now it's not going to happen.
And now, 6 months from now, you're moving toward, and see, this is what's important.
And what I'm saying is, but you see what I'm saying? Yeah. If Arpaio says that, that's bad. Do you think he would possibly say anything against Trump after he's...
Right. And the other thing I'm saying is, and this is what has to be, you know, now what you really have to take into account, there's a bunch of stuff about to go on in the next month in Congress, right? And from then on, we move into the 2018 midterms. Now,
yes.
Everybody's posturing for the 2018 midterms. So really, nothing big happens, you know what I mean, just before the midterms, because nobody wants a big fight. Nobody wants to close the government. You know, nobody wants anything outrageous or remarkable to happen on their watch going into the midterms. They want to cruise into the midterms smoothly and tell everybody and shake hands and kiss babies and get their seat back.
Well, and let me talk about this, too. I can tell you, and again, I've not talked to Steve, but let me tell you what's going to mess up their plans on that. Steve Bannon right now, you can tell, has two goals, which is to take out Ryan and to take out McConnell. Let me give an example. After Bannon was back, he did an editorial call the first night with Breitbart. This is reported by the Daily Variety. In that editorial call, he told his people, well, we need to do more in the Alabama race. Now, they've done subsequently two articles. What's going on in the Alabama Senate race? Jeff Sessions,
Strange and Moore,
stepped down. Luther Strange is the guy who's running against Judge Roy Moore. Strange is McConnell's guy. Does that make sense? Trump came out and tweeted twice that people should support Strange.
Yep.
Now Bannon is telling, you know, subsequently, Breitbart's done two articles on Moore. Why? This is a proxy war between McConnell and Bannon. And it allows...
But doesn't it also make it a proxy war between Bannon and Trump
to some
extent? You know what I mean?
It
has to be if Trump's...
It absolutely is, but it's peripheral. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
He's not calling out Trump. You're not going to see Bannon call out Trump directly. You're going to see these glancing blows, okay? And if Bannon can help Moore win, and by the way, from what I'm hearing on the ground in Alabama...
Moore's ahead.
Last
I checked, he was 32-20. He was just outside the margin of error.
And that's
you would have to predict
that's
a Moore
without
win.
Bannon. That's without Bannon. So what Bannon wants to show is that he and Breitbart are kingmakers. Does that make sense?
Yep.
He wants to show, hey, McConnell, hey, I just beat you in Alabama. Okay? And you've seen it. And by the way, the guy he had write the story was Matt Boyle. Matt is a lieutenant. Now that Bannon's back, he's doing Bannon's bidding. That's what you're seeing there. And so the political calculation of going to Phoenix, which is where Trump really started, that was his first big rally, pardoning Arpaio, it is absolutely red meat, but it's only going to go so far. But I think the other thing he's doing is assuring, I think this is a very bad sign for the wall. I'm going to tell you, this is a very bad sign for the wall. Now, that's another issue that Bannon... Look, here's the thing. If Trump caves on the wall, it's over.
Well, see, I see
there's
no way
he's
see, the thing about it, particularly now on the wall, and I think it's legitimate to talk about the wall since he's in Arizona and Arpaio's involved. The thing about the wall was he had to get it when he first got there. That to me, the only way he'd have got the wall is to get it in the beginning, and he didn't get it in the beginning because now what are you looking at? Now you're looking at they've got the issue of a clean debt ceiling. And to get a clean debt ceiling here, because now they're going to have to raise the debt ceiling. They've got to do a budget. He wants to do tax reform. In order to get a clean debt ceiling, here's the bottom line. He's probably going to have to get some Democrats to get that. And his people, the Mnuchins and the Cones of the world, are pushing for a clean debt ceiling, right? To raise the debt ceiling clean. So in order to get what his, and I think we're seeing now, he's going to go along with his cabinet. In order to get what his cabinet's pushing for, he's going to have some Democrats, which means things like walls, things that would be red meat for his base. All of those are going to, in the negotiations, right? the things that are more would be considered on both sides, and I'm going to use this term extreme on both sides, the things that the Democrats would really want for their base maybe, and that the Republicans wouldn't want to give on or vice versa. When you got to get people from the other party to get what you want, very early, those things all go. And that way, and then you only end up with some very minor, you know, wiggles in the system. So that's why I say
now,
going into
2018, what you're saying is
it's not going to be the time to get it.
What you're saying is makes perfect sense in a traditional political sense. Common sense, it makes sense that way. Let me give you another option, though. The other way is to beat the Republican Party into submission until you get people like McConnell and like Ryan to do the job that the base wants them to do. The fact is, one of the biggest downsides that Trump had is he is not a movement. Does that make sense? He's a person. He's right. One candidate. There was no down card. Do you know what I'm getting at there?
Yes.
In other words, where were the senators? Where were the House? And part of the problem is that the philosophy of populism has not, in fact, been clearly defined. Right. So if I ask you what's the populist position on healthcare, I don't know. What's the Democrat?
You could. What you'd have to do is now you have to go to the polls and you look at a bunch of polls and
consolidate. No, here's what I'm saying. I'm not talking. When I say populism, I don't mean what do the people think on it. I mean what I'm saying is this anti-elitist philosophy is a new way of doing politics, and so it means it doesn't fit into traditional Democrat or Republican lines.
But that being said, even beating them into submission, I think one of the things that happened was during the healthcare debate, I think the Trump administration kind of early tried a couple of different things. They tried negotiating. They tried beating them into submission. And it's something I keep talking about when so many people, Barack Obama, come to Washington and they go up on Capitol Hill and they realize they've run into this immovable object. They realize they run into this institution that is this old.
And so what I'm saying
and
is
that's why I said
you have to demolish the immovable object.
Right. And so you're not going to be able to do that even in one term. That's why I say he can fight for things like that. But in order to right now, they're going to be in a struggle just to keep the lights on. And there's things that it's going to have to be done. That's why, to me, particularly when you're looking at the last couple big things that have to be going into 2018, the Republicans, here's the bottom line. They are not going to want to shut the government down. That ain't happening.
Well, here's what I'm saying.
They're going to say we need to have a clean debt ceiling. We need to try to get a budget, which I don't think it'll be. I think it'll be another continuing. One thing for sure, if they don't get a budget and there's just another continuing resolution, that means they will get nothing. That nothing's going to happen.
But here's what I'm saying. Here's the $64 million question on this. Let me ask you, Garland. How do you do something that's never been done?
Good question.
And the answer is, until someone's done it, it's hard to say. See what I'm getting at? So what I'm suggesting here is, how do you land a man on the moon, right? There was a point where we had never done it. So we thought we knew. And along the way, there were missteps and mistakes and accidents and everything else. If you watch films like The Right Stuff or whatever, okay? And sometimes, since we're on Sputnik, let's just talk about, right? And sometimes things pop up. One of the things that spurred the U.S. space program on was the successes in the Russian space program.
Right.
Does that make sense? Yep. If not for Russia, you could make the case very clearly. If not for Russia, the U.S. would not have gotten to the moon as quickly as they did. They felt that they had to avoid losing face.
Both sides. And then when we got to the moon, it forced the Russians. So both we forced each other into a technology race, where both sides created a lot of new technology that they wouldn't have created unless they felt forced by the other side.
I'll say this real quick, going back to today,
right? So in order to do this, he's going to need a lot of allies. And tonight, as an example, you're going to a place where you've beat up on two of the people. And in September, when you need to come back and you need to get those people for walls or whatever, right? They ain't going to be there.
I know, but this is what I'm saying.
So you don't get the wall.
No, here's what I'm saying. How do you do something that's never been done? The answer is it's hard to say till you've done it. What's never been done? You're defining the problem, which is there's this immovable object. And I'm saying, how do you defeat the establishment, Democrats and Republicans? No one's ever done that. And the answer is, I think you have to go right at them. You have to go right at them. You can't compromise your way into victory here. Bannon gets that. Now, the problem, Steve's got a problem. I love Steve. But he tends to go things alone. He really does. And you could see that in the White House. This is what happened. He went it alone. He did not build up the allies that he needed to save himself.
So here's the reason that I think it won't happen. Because Trump surrounded himself with the people like we'll talk about, Steve Mnuchin and people like the next time. So I think ultimately he's not getting anything outside of the establishment because he surrounded himself with establishment people. But we're gonna have a great.
And that's why I think Bannon's out of there. But yeah, let's talk about that. We'll talk about that in round three.
About plenty more around. We're going to talk about some real weird stuff going on with Steve Mnuchin's wife in round three. You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines. Fault Lines.
Welcome to round three of Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary. Steve Mnuchin has amassed a fortune worth over $500 million through his investments with Goldman Sachs, real estate, Hollywood, CIT Bank, One West Bank, and hedge funds. Currently living in Washington, D.C. in a $12.6 million home, 9 bedrooms, 12.5 baths, 15,902 square feet, indoor pool, wine cellar. So Steve's doing pretty good. So here recently, he marries the beautiful actress Louise Linton, and she ran into a bit of a controversy today. So she's on Instagram. They land in Kentucky, and she writes an Instagram post where she says, great day, pound sign Kentucky, blah, blah, blah. And then she adds hashtags for various expensive pieces of her wardrobe. Hashtag Roland Murray, Hermes scarf, Tom Ford, hashtag Valentino. A Jenny Miller, who is a mother of three from Oregon, who I'm thinking probably doesn't have a $12.5 million house, says, it was offended. She says, glad we could pay for your little getaway. So, and she also Instagrams a picture of her and her husband getting off a jet that says the United States of America. It looks like Air Force One. She then blessed the mother of three from Oregon, Marie Antoinette style. Let me read what she says. Aw, did you think this was a personal trip? Adorable. Do you think the U.S. government paid for our honeymoon or personal travel? And I'm thinking, look at this jet. It's a blue and white, red, white, and blue jet that says United States of America. But she says, do you think the U.S. government paid for our honeymoon or personal travel? LOL. Have you given more to the economy than me and my husband, either as an individual earner in taxes or in self-sacrifice to your country? Because let's face it, a woman who's married to a guy worth $500 million has to make a lot of sacrifices. Miss Linton went on, I'm pretty sure we paid more taxes toward our day trip than you did. Pretty sure the amount we sacrifice per year, because when you're that rich, you make a lot of sacrifices, is a lot more than you'd be willing to sacrifice if the choice was yours. After that, she included emojis of a curled bicep and a face-blowing kiss, and then said, you're adorably out of touch. Your life looks cute. Go chill out and watch the new Game of Thrones. It's fab. So you talk about first, the ultimate.
Well, let me just say this, Colin. First off, you seem to have no problem going after Louise Linton, Steve Mnuchin's wife. And you're talking about this wealth that she has.
No.
But let me just say this. Good. Let me just say this because I think it's important. I want people to hear this.
Okay, go ahead.
You're attacking a person who grew up in a cold draft. You don't know anything about her childhood. This is a woman whose family owns Melville Castle outside of Edinburgh, Scotland. Now, here's the thing.
Which is not a large castle, I
right, and
add.
Here's the thing
and
about
it
castles.
Even get a dragon.
I don't know if you've ever been to a castle, but they are a little drafty. It's hard to air condition them.
Right.
So look, this woman has suffered.
You got alligators. You got to feed the alligators every day in the moat.
She suffered. Also, when she was a child and she had a private coach from the London Academy of Film and Dramatic Arts, you know what that's like. You've had private coaches. These people are like Nazis. They're basically...
Exactly.
They have you emote.
You got to stand on your toes while you're doing your bath. It's terrible.
So how dare you attack this woman who clearly rose from the castles of Scotland, right? I'm just saying, give her a break.
Started from the
bottom. The struggle is real, Garland. The struggle is real.
Yeah.
Also, let me point this out. She's got a Scottish accent. Have you heard those accents?
Yeah.
They're indecipherable.
There's a guy on Sputnik that does a show with a Scottish or some kind of.
By the way,
I'd
like to apologize to everyone in the Edinburgh Bureau.
Exactly.
So I'm sure the accents are wonderful. I'd like to apologize for that. But
trust me, if they work for Sputnik, they probably don't have a $12.5 million home with 9 bedrooms. But again, you know,
by the way, everything I just said is true. You know that.
Yes. Yes.
Her family owns a castle.
Yes. Grew up in incredible wealth. So
she owns a castle.
This to me, I mean, it's representative of so many things. You know, people look at the inequality right now, and then they look at a government that they feel is not listening to them. They look at policies that they feel are of no benefit to them. And you have someone, this was dripping with not just sarcasm. If it was sarcasm, that would be one thing. This was dripping with contempt. It was the contempt. It was almost like, how dare you? I mean, she said, your life looks cute. Yeah, here's a person who's like everyone else. She's got three kids. She's trying to make ends meet. She's trying, you know, doing the things that a person normally does to survive. That's cute to her. She's flying around. And she said, the government doesn't pay for this. Well, we found out later on that Steve Mnuchin reimbursed the government for that particular trip. But only because, so now this is what we're looking at here. And you wonder why people are angry at the government. You wonder why there's some people that don't even participate anymore. Look at the numbers of people that vote. You wonder why a lot of millennials are like, you know, it's on election day, they're home raking leaves or you know, playing Madden 2000 or something. People are unhappy with this type of attitude. And it's pretty sickening to me, Lee.
Well, let me say something, though. Like the designer stuff, there is a certain look. She's getting tagged. I don't think she's a conservative. I'm just going to say that. Her politics, in a sense, don't have anything
to do
with it.
They're, you know what I mean?
In fact, well, that's my point, though. Here's something else. I'm going to say this, too. Do you know who wears a lot of designer stuff, brags about it, is friends with Huma Abedin? Huma Abedin, Hillary Clinton's top assistant. Now, what I'm saying is, where are the attacks on that? So I just want to point out, again, I don't like hypocrisy.
Well, wait a minute. Bernie people went, you remember, I don't know if you remember, a lot of the people on the left, like, were talking about Hillary Clinton for the money that she got from Walt, you know.
That's right,
for
yes.
The $600 haircut, things of that nature. So my point is that there were a lot of Bernie people that yes. kind of walked away and exited. And this was like, this is, to me, the kind of thing that pushes the working class away. You know what I mean?
It does.
They look at it and they're like,
it should.
And how dare you laugh at us?
And this is why, and I've said this about Steve Bannon a lot. You got to remember Steve Bannon's background. Working class, Norfolk, Virginia, right? Was in the military, in the Navy, went to the Pentagon. That's why, even though he's a Goldman Sachs guy, his dad didn't own a castle. Does that make sense? So there is something, and I've been very critical of Ivanka Trump for the same reason. I've said part of her problem is, I've said it repeatedly, she is spoiled, right? She has literally never had, and I've had this discussion. I got into this with Roseanne Barr a year or so ago, because I know Roseanne a little bit. And I was talking to Roseanne Barr, and I was mentioning something about my diet, and she's like, well, you should eat grass-fed beef. And I laughed, and I said, Roseanne, I know you grew up in working-class family, but when was the last, see, here's the thing, Garland. When you're at a certain level of wealth, you don't go to the supermarket and look at prices. Does that make sense?
Remember George Bush Senior?
Yeah, that's
when
right.
he went to the supermarket and he didn't know what the little scanner and the beeper thing was.
You could make
the cook handles that.
I've made when I was younger. I was making a couple hundred grand a year, $250,000 a year. That's a good money, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even at that point, when you go to the supermarket, you look at the price of steaks. Does that make sense? You have to. You just go like, no, I can't afford that. When you get to a certain point in wealth, you no longer have to do that. And then at that point, you forget what it's like to buy the 73% ground beef because the 82% ground beef is too expensive this week. Regular people have had to deal with that. This is what I've said about Ivanka. She's somebody who's never had to think about the price of anything.
But here's the thing. I think there's something totally different here. Because this is, there's a reason that people are using the term, you know, Marie Antoinette, because this really is a let them eat cake moment.
Yes.
Because there's a difference between being ignorant of, you know, what it's like to be a poor, to be a working class or middle class person or even upper middle class person. There's a difference between that and making a statement that shows that you are contemptible to those people. When you say, and this to me, here's the tellingly, remarks. You're adorably out of touch. Out of touch with what? And then she goes on to say, your life looks cute. So this is like the ultimate elitism here. Of
but
Mnuchin's
how's that different
people.
Than what I'm agreeing with you. I'm yeah. saying it's part of, you have to understand.
I don't think it's being out of touch. You know, it's different to me. It's contempt for the working class. It is like looking down. I remember there was a guy, I remember reading an article a while back about one of these oligarchs in San Francisco, right? And the guy was in some like 50,000 square foot mansion. It was this unbelievable mansion overlooking on the side of a mountain. You know, he's the guy's a billionaire, right? And he was saying, yeah, you know, but, you know, people like me are being prosecuted. It's almost, you might remember the story. It's almost like the Jews were prosecuted in Germany. And everybody read that story and like, dude, you're worth billions of dollars. I mean, excuse me, persecuted. I said prosecuted. Dude, you're worth billions of dollars and you're the victim. You know, and that's the mentality that is driving people away. And I say that to say this. That I believe, see, Donald Trump has surrounded himself with these people. I'm not saying Donald Trump is or isn't like that, but I'm saying there is a facet to Donald Trump's personality, as is evidenced by his cabinet. There is an elitist facet to his, personality.
There is. And like I said, the fact that Bannon's out of there is part of that.
Yeah, that.
No, but let me also.
Down to it. He sided, if you're going to side with the populist guy, the guy, and I don't think it's a mistake that the day they're making the decision on Afghanistan is the day that Bannon, who opposed anything, is that it was like, you're out of here.
But let me give you the flip side of this. There's a poet who once said, "Mo money, mo problems." Right? That is the flip side.
Yeah, that was Biggie Smalls.
That was Biggie, B-I-G-G-I-E. So, and he meant it. There is truth to the fact that, by the way, there is. When you have you ever seen those reality shows? What happened? By the way, there's a huge Megazillions lottery thing tonight, so I got to buy.
Which I Jack, intend to win.
Jack, remember? Yeah, no, dude.
Speaking of
more
money,
intend
more problems.
No, I intend to win.
I'm gonna. Hopefully, I'll have 650 million more problems tomorrow.
By the way, if I win the lottery tonight, I will still show up to work tomorrow to laugh at Garland. Yes. But my point is, I will buy you coffee though. But here's the thing. There is, you've seen it where people win the lottery and then their life gets ruined because they won the lottery. There is a problem. There are separate problems. My point is, and I mentioned the thing about Roseanne earlier. I like Roseanne a lot personally. She's nice. I just did it to kind of try to snap her back into what the reality is that she knew, okay? That she knew because she did grow up working class, okay? Because occasionally celebrities need to be reminded of that. I don't know how else to put it, but I've hung out, you know, I have friends, Dog and Beth. I've hung out with Dog and Beth. They have different problems. You walk through someplace, you and I can walk to the train and no one bothers us, right? And I'm not saying it's a bother. It's cool when people say, hey, I like you. I want to take a picture with you. I'm a fan of yours, but it's different. Dog, I've been with him. He can't walk 50 feet. Without three people stopping him. Now, that may not sound like the worst problem in the world.
Yeah, after a couple of days, it probably gets pretty old.
And if you got to go to the restroom, it's not, you know, it's tricky. I'd have to plan at my age. But the point is, I think what we need is empathy on both sides. I am much more sympathetic with somebody who's working class, who struggled and everything like that. I am very critical of Mnuchin. But I want to point out, I don't like the political hypocrisy of equating. I really don't like people like Bill and Hillary Clinton, who became multi-millionaires from quote-unquote public service. And what the left does is they justify it. See, this woman, Linton, she wrote a book on how she went to save the black people. Did you see
it was
about
a book about Zambia. Well, she had one ghost written, and it was pretty much all lies. And she had to take it off.
And that's when I say she went to... did it to save the black people. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yes, exactly. It was the old white hero going Africa kind of Tarzan thing going on.
I'm not making that up. Literally go look at the reviews and stuff like that. She describes herself as...
And you can't get it anymore because they took it off. It was, you know, shown to be... She talked about in her book about, you know, sleeping at night and aware and hearing the gunshots and the rebels. The only thing is she was in Zambia, which is like a very peaceful country and there haven't been any rebels there. But yes. You got to admit, it sounded scary. My point is not about her wealth, though. My point is about what we're seeing here is really not about what she has. It's about two things, number one.
But do you think
it is about a perception
think,
that a lot no. of working class people have
do
that the
Hillary
elites
Clinton
are looking
has contempt for poor people? Be
what's,
honest.
What's that?
Do you think Hillary Clinton loves poor people or do you think she uses them?
I can't say really. You know what I mean? I can't speak for Hillary Clinton.
Really?
I know.
Okay,
I,
but what
I
do you
support
think?
Her.
What's your gut, Carl?
I don't know. I didn't support Hillary because of her policies, but I don't know about her. And one of her policies being that if it was her, she'd have probably sent twice as many troops last night and she'd have told us how many.
But my point is when you talk about the contempt, I'm agreeing with you. I just want you to, I think that she also has contempt
Well, I don't know, because she just didn't do this. So what I'm talking about is a person who did something. See, here's the thing about it. The fact of the matter is, this is one person writing this. And you can say, man, this woman's a real jerk, which is what I'd say reading this, right? But the bigger story here...
She's apologized for it too, you know?
Right. Yeah,
did
but
you here's
the thing about it. If the bigger story here is that it's symbolic to a lot of Americans who feel, who already believe that there is an elite ruling class that of oligarchs who look down on them, who send their jobs over. So, you know, and you add that to the whole symbolism here. Here's a woman like looking down her nose and speaking condescendingly to a working class, you know, mother with three kids. Meanwhile, her husband made $500 million off of Wall Street hedge funds,
et cetera. But that's why I'm confused that you won't say that about Hillary. I'm just confused why you won't knock Hillary.
No, because Hillary didn't write this.
I know,
that's
but
all
I'm not
just saying, so it's not relevant.
I'm trying to take it beyond just because I agree. Look,
I'm talking about the symbolism.
But you know,
here.
I agree with you. It's not symbolism.
Is symbolism.
No. It's not. Let me explain. It's not symbolism. It's her doing it. This is not symbolic of her being mean to
No. I'm saying to a lot of, when we see things, when you have people, a lot of people who always already feel like that have a lot of animus towards what they see as an elite ruling class. And when they hear the word Goldman Sachs, they're burned up. And Trump knew it because when he was running, he said these darn Goldman Sachs people are, you know, and he equated Hillary with Goldman Sachs very effectively, I might add. And then he put all of these Goldman Sachs people in his cabinet and people look at this and there's the symbolism. There's a person who made a fortune with Goldman Sachs and Wall Street. He goes out and he's got the beautiful, you know, trophy wife here. And she's, you know, look at me. I've got all of these wonderful things. Okay, you did that. But then as soon as you get a slight bit of criticism from an average person in Oregon, you couldn't have a more average state with average people than Oregon. Oregon just
sounds like an average person. What?
Oregon's a beautiful state.
Very Oregon-phobic.
No, I'm saying when you think of the average Joe, you think of like Oregon, Delaware, Ohio. Those are average people, though. That's not Massachusetts.
Well, I was there when the Umpqua Community College massacre happened in Roseburg. I was there right afterwards. And but, yeah, that's a working class logging community.
My point is
very conservative.
Why would this God's story country. Catch on like it has? Because it symbolizes something that a lot of Americans feel, that there is an elite ruling class who looks down their nose at it.
Let me relate this.
Doesn't create wealth. They extract wealth. And by extracting wealth, I mean this. There's wealth in the economy instead of creating something, a new business that creates more jobs and creates new wealth. They come up with a complicated financial tool on Wall Street that extracts wealth and you end up having more poor people, they got more money.
I'm just trying to get you
and now they laugh
fruitlessly at them. To see the hypocrisy of the left on this.
Any.
For instance, take Joss Whedon. Joss Whedon's the TV producer, right, whose wife came out, well-known feminist, big liberal. Joss Whedon, big liberal. Whose wife points out that he's been cheating on her consistently throughout the marriage and that the feminist thing, I've said this before about abortion, you think guys like, I'm not going to be lectured about feminism from guys like John Edwards and Bill Clinton and Anthony Weiner. I'm just not, by the way, who are all pro-choice.
But there's a difference to be between people who do things that are, okay, they did it and that reflects upon the character of the person, right? This is different. This isn't even about her. This is not about it. To me, you may look at it and say, okay, she seems like a bad person and it reflects upon her character.
I'm saying,
I think the reason the story is big is the symbolism of an elite class sneering down their nose at the working class with condescension. You can almost see that. You can see
Democrats.
The person in the castle looking down their nose.
Which is why I hate them. But
you're misled people understand. You think it's like, oh, you know what? The Democrats. Now, the Koch brothers or Paul Singer, they never do such a thing.
No, I've never
like,
said that.
Billionaires
I'm critical.
And billionaires.
This is the difference, Garland. I'm critical of both sides. And when you had the chance to say, yeah, Hillary is awful in that regard, too, you jumped it back to Paul. Clearly,
this is not about Hillary to me. And to change it from Hillary, this is about the symbolism of the elite class.
Which would define Hillary Clinton pretty well.
You would define the elite class. Well, look, we're going to be back. When are we going to be back? We're going to be back tomorrow at 4 p.m. We got plenty going on. We're going to have a lot of
money.
Unless we win the lottery. Then I got 650 million reasons that I am out of here. You've been listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines.